Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dan Tenglerini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer. Also joining us from IBM is Roxanne Ulrich. Dan, the Department of the Treasury established three priority performance goals that seek to drive its focus and achieve measurable results. Would you tell us more about Treasury's top three performance goals?
Sure. Our top three challenges in management are the global financial crisis. Number one in our high priority goals is repairing and reforming the financial system and really expanding economic opportunity as kind of a related component to that. The next is increasing voluntary compliance in our tax system. And then also as part of that, simplifying the tax code and working to, you know, improve the tax code and continually focusing on efforts to make voluntary compliance an easier default location. The final one is increasing our paperless transactions. And in many ways, these three kind of high priority goals reflect the three kind of levels that we work at. One, the Treasury Department works at this national and international level, where we have an oversight relationship, we have a policy relationship with our global economic and financial system and structure. And so what we're trying to do is recognizing the crisis that we've just come through, that we need to put in place those protections that minimize the likelihood of that happening again, reducing the impact of financial shocks, and bringing the world together closer to recognizing a global economy that we have to work together on these issues, while at the same time improving and enhancing our national security and minimizing people's ability to use the global financial system for untoward outcomes. The next level, the increasing voluntary tax compliance, really deals with how Treasury interacts with the American public directly as a service provider, as an organization that interacts at a fundamental level with people, providing this very core service, which is the tax collection, which is not just putting the fuel in the tank of government so that we can continue to provide all the services of government, but also it's designed to encourage and discourage certain investments and types of behaviors. And so what we want to do is make sure that we're constantly working on that system to make it fairer, to make it easier, working with the IRS to improve, say, their website, increase the e-filing rates, improve the quality of preparers. So that's the next level. And then the third one, the increasing paperless transactions, is really about the wiring diagram, the bones, the systems of the Treasury Department itself, and saying that we have a responsibility to really improve the way the Treasury Department operates at a fundamental level. And one of the ways we want to get at that is ask ourselves, what are those business processes we employ? How do we do stuff? And can we set as kind of a common metric, could we reduce the amount of paper we're moving around, paper being a proxy, frankly, for inefficiency?
Well, the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act represents the most sweeping financial reforms since the Great Depression. Would you give us an overview of your role, meaning the Treasury's role, in implementing a lot of the requirements associated with this act?
So the Dodd-Frank bill is an incredibly important and historic piece of legislation. And what it does is, in part, it's an effort to try to bring the financial regulators together and get them to continually interact and work with each other on issues of systemic risk and ask the question, you know, what is happening within our financial system across the various different specialties of financial regulation so that we can get a better global picture of what's taking place. One of the core provisions of that is something called the Financial Stabilization Oversight Council, or FSOC, chaired by the Secretary of Treasury, and then, you know, peopled by all the core or key regulators, including representatives of state insurance regulators, which is a very kind of new component to the way the federal government is interacting with the financial system. Insurance has generally been a state issue. FSOC then would be supported by the Office of Financial Research, which is really supposed to be this intellectual research arm that's looking at, you know, at being asked questions by the FSOC and then answering them through strong data and building relations with the financial community, building relations with the regulators to try to pick up trends or try to expose weaknesses and have a back and forth between the FSOC about what they can do to, you know, build stronger regulation, or if the regulation is impeding competition or if it's limiting innovation. So to really provide meaningful kind of support and research to the FSOC. Another key component of the Dodd-Frank is the creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB. And Treasury's job is to get that thing going, to start it up and let it take off. Elizabeth Warren is leading that effort, and that's trying to make sure that the financial system that has gotten so broad and complicated is not so complicated that an average American can get overtaken by those complications, to try to make it fairer, try to make it more transparent, try to make it clearer and make it more honest, and really, you know, give people somewhere where they can go if they have concerns, if they have questions. Education is a big part of its mission as well. Great new person there, Holly Petraeus, is going to work with our American service members to help them navigate the financial system, help learn ways that we can make it more transparent and easier for them to deal with the system. We have an office we have to stand up related to students and to the elderly. So that is kind of the part of the Dodd-Frank bill that people are probably going to see the most, feel and touch, and to try to create some way that we can kind of create a fair environment in which people get to interact with this huge component of our economy.
Changing direction a little bit, looking at the 2012 budget, Dan, how has the budget passed back, as well as the recent call to freeze domestic spending, influence how you intend to accomplish objectives and prioritize your key initiatives?
Well, I think the 2012 budget has just reiterated the focus that we have to have as the Treasury Department anyway. Deputy Secretary Wolin has started this quarterly review process that we bring all our bureaus and policy offices through, and it's always had a focus on the resources that people have. What do we give you, and what do you do with what you got? With the idea being that the Treasury Department in particular has to have a high level of efficiency and a real focus on producing the most for the amount that gets put into it, and then asking the questions, are these really our priorities? Are these where we should be spending limited resources? And so the 2012 budget is really an expression of something that we see as part of our broader mission as the Treasury Department anyway. And the Secretary sees as one of his missions within the federal government is to constantly push on efficiency and effectiveness of programs so that people feel very comfortable when they make that payment to us through the IRS. They feel like it's going to a good place and it's going to be doing good stuff, and we have to feel strongly about the quality of the service we're providing. So I think the 12 budget, the 11 budget before it, all the budgets we've worked on in this administration have really been about a continued focus for the Treasury Department on efficiency and effectiveness of service delivery.
Reducing improper payments seems to be very, very critical. We hear a lot about that recently. Would you tell us about the Treasury programs such as the Earned Income Tax Credit, which are more susceptible to improper payments?
Well, I think, you know, the Treasury Department, again, is kind of at the corner of Maine and Maine on this issue because of all the payments that we make. We make on behalf of other agencies as well. And so we've had a few cases where we've been kind of the place where we've caught improper payments, or where, you know, improper payments have come back to. And we recognize that we have a unique responsibility among federal agencies. That's why we're working closely with OMB. In the President's budget, there's a $10 million initiative to develop a do not pay list and a portal that actually makes sure that agencies aren't making payments to people who don't qualify for them. We're working hard to further develop the Treasury Offset Program, to work with agencies around debt collection to enhance and improve our federal debt collection activities. If people owe the federal government money, we should be really making sure that they pay that money to the federal government. That, I think everyone would agree, would be an area that we can continue to emphasize. And then things like EITC, a lot of our tax credit programs, you know, the assumption is that you qualify. And so we pay based on that assumption, and then we come back and we audit. One of the interesting things about the quarterly reviews is we spend a lot of time talking with Commissioner Shulman, who is a really thoughtful and skilled manager. He thinks a lot about this stuff, and he's asking those great kind of efficiency 80-20 questions. Where do I get 80% of the bang for 20% of the effort? In talking with them, we realized that 70% of the EITC improper payments come from returns prepared by professional preparers. And so it's part of the IRS's efforts to get a better handle on who the professional preparers are, actually have some kind of testing and certification or registration of the professional preparers, or at least create some system of accountability, and then we can reduce things, at least a big chunk of things like improper EITC claims and other claims. So that's kind of where the this kind of disciplined process of really understanding how these errors happen, what's the data underlying them, and then what specific actions you can take to address what you uncover through that data. I think that's the exciting part of working on this stuff.
Well, I want to keep on the idea of exciting parts. So I want to talk about the creation of the Office of Financial Innovation and Transformation. And in particular, what's the mission of this office? But more specifically, what progress has been happening thus far in developing a standard electronic invoicing platform for the federal government?
So that's another opportunity, really, that I think was realized, at the nexus of OMB and Treasury, recognizing the OMB cross-agency, cross-cutting role, asking questions on the way we manage our financial management systems. Can we find opportunities that really leverage the size and the scale of the federal government to produce better results at a lower cost? And OFID is, again, this small office who's really trying to look at not just making investments in these big financial management transformation systems that seem to take many years, have a kind of a mixed record, I'll say generously, of success, and ask ourselves, what are those kind of smaller platform ways that we can integrate ourselves that get, you know, big buck returns, internet payment platform, the IPP, signing up vendors so that we actually make electronic payments to those vendors. That's another big population of paper checks that we cut. That will reduce the cost of just, you know, paying our vendors. But the more interesting component of it is if we can begin to combine the records, we can get a better set of spend patterns. We can understand who's buying what and from where. That then feeds into work that Jeff Zients is leading in trying to drive down the cost of contracting government-wide. And so OFID is still new and young and early, but there's a lot of great stuff already, you know, in the kitchen that they're busy cooking up right now. And Treasury is excited about taking a leadership position as being an operating agency that actually implements this.
That's a nice transition into understanding Treasury's lead role in the Recovery Act and its success of the Recovery Act. Would you tell us more about your efforts of your office in managing, tracking, and reporting on the significant amount of monies that went out the door for the Recovery Act? And more importantly, what are some of the innovative business or tracking or reporting requirements from the Recovery Act that you could include in new operations at Treasury?
Well, I think the Recovery Act actually is really interesting in the work that was done in the administration around the Recovery Act is most interesting, not around the innovation, there's an awful lot of it, but around some of the core management practices that when exercised yielded great results. The fact is that the vice president would assemble his Recovery Act cabinet. There were accountable officials in each of the agencies. I had the good fortune of being the accountable official for the Treasury Department. And he would assemble us, and really we would have homework we had to do for that meeting. We had goals that we had to meet for that meeting. And you didn't want to go to that meeting without having done your homework and met your goals. A couple people made the mistake early on, and you know, you think, you know, this is the vice president's going to be very dignified, and it's going to be, and he's very dignified, but he's also very focused on this outcome. He had been deputized to deliver a Recovery Act set of programs at the highest possible quality, the lowest possible problems with it. We had the Recovery Act IG board who was kind of, they were not going to let anyone get away with anything. Everything was going to be put up on the Recovery Act website. The RAP board was going to meet monthly, and they were going to try to find stuff. And so the IRS, I think, is a unsung hero for some of the things that they put in nearly overnight in terms of delivering some of the tax benefits of the Recovery Act. 42% of the Recovery Act went through the Treasury Department in the form of tax benefits and some of the other programs. I know there's a lot of debate about the relative merits. I happen to come down on the side that it was a great program, had some very, very positive consequential effects.
How is Treasury leveraging analytics and data to improve program performance? We will ask Dan Tenglerini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer, to share with us when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.